Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. On the local news roundup, the Republican Site Selection Committee makes its choice. It's Charlotte. The 2020 GOP convention is coming, but they almost weren't invited. Charlotte City Council vote was close, 6-5. The stakes were high, and for at least one council member, the backlash has begun. President Trump shocks a lot of people with his Helsinki press conference, and with a week full of misstatements and retractions and contradictions to those retractions, we hear about local reaction. And Katz unveils ambitious and expensive plans for transit expansion, including a tunnel under Uptown. Our roundtable of reporters is ready to detail those and other stories, and those reporters include David Borax.
Hello, Mike.
From WFAE News. And Doss Helms is here from the Charlotte Observer.
Good morning.
Hello, Mary C. Curtis, columnist and award winner with Roll Call and contributor to WCCB-TV. What did you win?
2018 Clarion Award from the Association for Women in Communications. Thank you, Mike, and welcome.
Congratulations. And Eric Spanberg is senior staff writer at the Charlotte Business Journal. Welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
We're all on the radio in the studio. If that's not enough, you can watch us on Facebook Live. So in what was probably the most closely watched city council meeting since the days of HB2, city leaders on Monday narrowly decided to keep Charlotte's hat in the ring for the Republican convention. There was an expectation that the meeting would be full of fireworks, given the last-minute opposition that seemed to erupt. About 100 people, I believe, spoke to council, including Ray McKinnon, who said it wasn't a good enough reason to host President Trump and the RNC just because Democrats had their turn here in 2012.
President Obama did not speak about people the way this president does. President Obama did not do the thing that this president has done, and I know that you know that. We must not be party to normalizing this hateful man.
But those opponents were outnumbered by supporters like event planner Kimberly Brantigan, who invoked the Always Welcome marketing campaign the city rolled out following HB2.
Always Welcome Charlotte means that everybody is welcome. This standard should be across the board, and we should not start selecting who is not welcome in Charlotte based on their political beliefs. So please do not neglect the city, the small businesses, and those needing paychecks of this amazing opportunity.
And that was the argument that won out, along with the hope that the city would be an example of bipartisanship in these polarizing times. Here's Democratic Councilman Larkin Eggleston, who cast the deciding vote.
Hosting the RNC in Charlotte in no way implies our endorsement of this president or the policies of his administration. It only proves Charlotte is a diverse, inclusive city capable of taking on big challenges. I will not combat the disappointing characteristics of this president by emulating them.
Thank you.
So Eggleston said he was voting for the RNC even though it might come with a political cost. Has there been blowback?
Yes, there is. You can say that, Mike.
I think he said something like, I hate the internet.
Social media means you get your blowback immediately. And there has been, I brought along my handy visual aid of who voted yes and no, which anybody who was on the internet, on social media, anywhere Monday night saw. People were keeping track, and whether you want to reward the yeses and punish the noes or vice versa, there's between now and 2020, there's going to be a city council election.
Yes, 2019 is going to be very interesting, isn't it? And the mayor's race, you would think, would be interesting on the Democratic side, obviously, with the Democratic mayor very forcefully supporting this convention. But, Mike, in Charlotte, as always, it came down to counting the rubles,
money.
Comrade.
Money.
Yes.
Eggleston reportedly was bombarded, as you've alluded to, with expletives on social media. And yesterday there was a letter to the editor in the paper from someone who said that he was a constituent who voted for Eggleston but would not do so again. Eggleston said, this is not the end of my world if I only serve one term or 2 years on city council. I'm paraphrasing here. Do you think people will remember this in 2 years? I mean, the news cycle is now so blisteringly, mind-numbingly, exhaustingly fast. Can we possibly remember this?
Well, remember, Michael. Remember, Mike, it will only
call
be...
Call me Michael.
Sorry. Remember, Mike, it won't be 2 years because it's 2019. The city election
okay,
is before...
Okay, 1 year. Well, heck, Will they remember it next week?
Well,
I mean, seriously.
I'll tell you why they will.
This past week.
I'll tell you why they will. You're right. Everything goes by in a blur. But we have wonderful advertising and marketing and firms and political consultants who will recycle this footage so that everyone can remember what happened.
You know, there'll be a lot of water over the dam between now and then. I'm not sure it's going to be the lead issue. But, you know, I think some people out there are probably thinking right now, hey, should I run against Larkin Eggleston? I read in The Observer that Patsy Kinsey, whom he beat in the last election, said she might even run again. So.
Well, though, wait a minute. I mean, I agree. Everything moves quickly, but what's going to be bigger than Trump and the RNC coming to Charlotte? I mean, that's an easy issue for people to latch on to.
Also, I mean, the news cycle is so quick. We don't know what's going to happen in between then. Something might happen in the national news as far as Trump is concerned. Also, we'll be right in the middle of the run-up to the convention at that point. So people will be seeing, is this going smoothly? Is a security plan in place? How will I be convenienced or inconvenienced? So we'll be right in the middle of planning that. So it's not as though the issue will disappear completely.
And we do have a president who's very good at reminding people why they love him or hate him. So
yes.
Whichever side you're on, that may renew your resolve to play that out in the city election.
And as you said, Eric, with Vi Lyles, I think this is a big test for the mayor. She supported it and endorsed it, and she saw the economic possibilities. And this, you know, she's in Austin right now to do this. But at the same time, she said she wouldn't give a welcoming speech. I think she told you, Mike, because I'm not a Republican.
Yeah.
And so in a sense, that's going to really please no one.
Right.
that comment, I'm not a Republican, came at the very end of our visit with the mayor. We were completely out of time. Otherwise, I would have followed up, because how many other conventions in host cities where the party of the mayor is not the party of the convention has the mayor made?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's the right question. And that's why I think, particularly Vi Lyles, it's so interesting. First of all, Vi Lyles has always been one of the most careful and cautious politicians I've seen in city government. And she went completely off script with this one. I mean, this is a bold step for any politician to take. And I think you're right, Mike, in that it's so interesting that you go down this path of, okay, this is the right thing to do. I'm going to serve.
We want to be inclusive.
We're going to be inclusive. I'm going to serve all the constituents. This will help our city. And then, oh, wait a minute, I'm not going to welcome them to town. I mean, there's a disconnect there that I would think if someone challenges her, they will go after that specific aspect again and again and again.
Oh, yeah, you can't win. And it's funny because Charlotte and Mayor Lyles are so cautious, and the other finalist was Las Vegas, but we're the one that's we're taking the gamble.
Right, right.
And in Las Vegas, the mayor, and I mean the city itself.
Vegas knows the house always.
And the city itself didn't sponsor that. And so that was really interesting. But Charlotte, the lure of being one of those select cities that's hosted both a Republican and Democratic convention will put us on a list. I think, you know, in a way, Charlotte can't resist that, too.
Right.
And so they will take that gamble. But so much is going to depend on how this comes off.
We live in a Republican world. The Congress is controlled by Republicans. The president is a Republican. The Supreme Court is quickly becoming stocked with conservatives who reflect Republican values. We have a legislature, and the state of North Carolina is controlled by the Republicans. And even though we have a Democratic governor, the governor has no power whatsoever, and they are seeking to lessen that power, the office, not just the person. And we went through this whole HB2 fracas between the Democratic city of Charlotte and the Republican legislature in Raleigh. Is this an attempt on her part, do you think, to mend those incredibly broken fences?
Well, I think that she felt the pressure of how can you turn away, as Mary says, how can you turn away this chance to be one of a select number of cities? I don't know what it means, but Charlotte and other cities cling to accomplishments, if you can call it
that. World-classness.
Yeah, the world-classness aspect. And I think she was going to feel so much pressure, and probably did, from the business community. I mean, hospitality, the hospitality industry, everyone in business is automatically going to say, you should do this because it will bring in money. Now, there were some dissenters, but mostly what you heard from business executives was, you have to do this because this will put the city in a new
back light. At the beginning of the year, you know, when this opportunity arose, Charlotte jumped on it, right? That's what we do. I said this the other day. you know, attracting businesses and conventions is one of our lines of business for the city of Charlotte. And so that was sort of the default, and we did that. And now, you know, things are a little different this time around with this president. People decided that they wanted to push back on that. This should not be automatic, they were saying.
And people were on board for this at the beginning, I think, even Democrats, including Justin
Harlan. As it got closer.
No. But as it got closer, it was because of, I think, a lot had to do with the separation of children and their parents.
Well, also, as it became clear that we were probably going to get it, people started saying, well, wait a minute, do we really want this?
And this is a convention like no other because it's a president like no other. And that is an obvious fact lying out there. And it's interesting because the one council member who was always against it, LaWanna Mayfield, basically said that at that meeting, you know, I'm black, I'm gay, and a woman, and I feel that this a president in this party, they don't respect me, they don't respect my constituents. And whatever you want to say, she drew that line in the sand that it's not all about the money.
Justin Harlow, who was on this program earlier this week, a Democrat from City Council, was on board with this initially, but at that meeting on Monday night, he talked about what he described as the president's divisive statements about minorities, women, immigrants, and the disabled, saying, I'd no sooner bring Donald Trump and the RNC to Charlotte, to the home that I chose and love, where my wife and I are raising our black son, any sooner than I would support a Klan rally in this city. And here are two more of the no voters, LaWanna Mayfield and Braxton Winston.
Whatever dollars and cents you think, at some point, you have to recognize that blood money is not good.
I've said many times over these past weeks that the crux of this decision rests on the effect of one man, Donald Trump. You see, I don't really see him as a Republican. I see him as a human avatar of white supremacy.
And he described on this program the president in much more descriptive terms. Have we ever heard members of Charlotte City Council be as negatively outspoken and forthcoming with their opinions about parties, issues, individuals as this instance?
I believe people feel the stakes are that high. I'm not speaking for people, and you would have to ask them. But in this sense, I do think they believe the stakes are that high. And it's almost a philosophical question. The mayor and others talk about inclusion of a diversity of viewpoints, and other folks are saying, how much should you be inclusive if it's the means, the exclusion of other people, and the fact that this is a blue city.
It's difficult at this point, I think, to separate the Republican Party from the president, Donald Trump. But how many of these no votes were aimed directly at the president versus the GOP?
I think it was entirely Trump-driven. I do think it's still interesting to me that, you know, you had this outcry and you played some of those clips of obviously Democrats on council who were very upset by this, but Donald Trump has not changed from when he went down that escalator in 2015 to when he became the nominee in 2016 to 17 months into his presidency. And I think David is right that a lot of people sort of went along because they didn't think Charlotte had a chance. But that almost rings hollow, I would think, to some that, okay, it's fine to go after this, but then if the city really has a chance, well, then you have to turn around and jump up and down and scream about it. Why not say something in the beginning if you truly hold this conviction? Why did you wait?
Well, it's like, let's go after it. Oh, wait, what is this?
But there's no mystery about what this is. I mean, it's the Republican National Convention. He's the president. I mean, was anybody confused about that?
It's not
but
Mitt Romney.
Lyles on Mike's interview had an interesting point of view on that, in that she said, yes, we had this early meeting. We got the nods from 10 of them. And maybe she's throwing people under the bus, but it didn't sound like it. She said a lot of council members are new, and they maybe didn't realize how things were developing and how this was moving down the road until it was too late, because you had seven other cities that went to the interested cities meeting but backed out early. We got to a point where it was going to be very costly to back out.
Nobody bid on this except for us and I think the Republican committee in Las Vegas. We'll talk about what that might mean when we come back. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's the local news roundup. We're talking about the RNC coming to town. It's almost a fait accompli. The head of the RNC site selection committee had a Facebook live chat yesterday with Tariq Bokhari, member of city council, Republican. Said he's heard from one council member who voted no, but who now says they're ready to work with the RNC to pull this off, because we're going to get it. They're going to make the announcement today. If we don't get it, it will be earth-shaking. David Borax is here from WFAE News, and Doss Helms, education reporter for the Charlotte Observer, Mary C. Curtis from Roll Call and WCCB-TV, and Eric Spanberg, senior staff writer for the Charlotte Business Journal. The reason we're going to get it, and it would be earth-shattering if we didn't, is because no other city other than Charlotte bid on this. The city of Las Vegas did not bid on this. It's the local Republican Party that said, we'll host it in Las Vegas if you come here. Why is it that no other city even put in a bid? There's an article in the Observer this morning that talks about all these cities that went to the initial call for proposal meeting and got the list of demands that the Republican National Committee would need to host their convention in your city, coming to a city near you, and all of them suddenly had no availability of venues or not enough hotel space or this or that or the other thing. Why?
I think in the most simple way.
That can't be true.
It comes down to a red versus blue thing. Cities tend to be blue, and the Republican Party, is the reddest event we're going to get in the next few years.
And again, it comes down to this president. It's the same concerns that we're dealing with belatedly.
My point is, no other city voted a bid on this. We did.
But let's look at Charlotte. Come on, Mike. I mean, this is a city with the ultimate insecurity complex. It always has been. And the chance to get this type of high-profile event is irresistible,
But also, I think, you know, this is a chance to this is a chance to showcase the city on a national and international stage, and everybody sees there are positives. But as Ann said, with this president, you know you're going to draw many protesters. So it's going to be a huge security challenge, both financially
and— But all conventions
and,
draw protesters.
Yes, but this guy, I've already seen Facebook posts saying, oh, I'm glad it's in Charlotte. I can— It's really close by. I can drive down to protest. And you're going to see this. And that's
true of every city.
Yeah, but we always talk about we want Charlotte to have not the NC behind it, not to be confused with Charlottesville or Charleston. But think of that. Charlottesville and Charleston are famous now for many things. Mm-hmm. Charlottesville for the protest, of course, where one person was killed. Charleston for some events that have happened there, including at Mother Emanuel. So everybody, all these other cities saw, oh, wow, we can showcase our city. Oh, wow, there's going to be some problems.
So Eli Portillo, writing this week in The Observer, says, forget red and blue. Most of the arguments in favor of bringing the 2020 Republican National Convention to Charlotte are focused on green. And some of the opponents say that this bid flies in the face of the stated goals and aspirations of the city of Charlotte. How many people believe that we are letting the allure of money trump morals here?
See what you did there?
I did, but I thought I'd just gloss over it. And should that be a consideration?
Well, I think just a partial answer, at least, is that I think almost invariably when you have this kind of controversial event, the argument is going to be, look what it's going to do economically. It's going to bring jobs, and people are going to who support it are going to push back and say, however you feel about Donald Trump or the Republican Party, what about the single mother who works at a hotel and is going to get extra work and earn extra money because you have all these thousands of people coming to town? Same thing with the restaurant worker, same thing with the taxi cab driver, and on and on and on. And so I think that's an argument that you've heard before and you're going to hear again.
But although the economic argument is complicated because, as folks have pointed out, the last time when the Democrats came to town, many people who worked in the city didn't come into work. And so basically the folks who were here for the convention replaced the foot traffic that they usually get. And you saw it in the people who did speak to the council, the cab drivers, folks like that. So even the economic argument is more complicated than
And it's always overblown.
And even Braxton Winston, whose day job is as a stagehand here, suggested that during 2012, actually their wages were depressed and that it wasn't the economic boon that everybody says it is. And we heard from other people, other speakers the other night as well, that maybe this isn't the biggest thing that people are saying it is.
Mayor Vile-Isles was on this program as well this week because I thought we ought to talk to the person who staunchly supported this. She checked with council, and as we said, checked with councils and other leaders before launching this effort. It was late in the game that in the last 2 or 3 weeks that opposition began to emerge, but she never wavered in her support or the reasons why she supports bringing the convention to town, although she does acknowledge the anger that has come out from some quarters.
I can understand. I probably really have caused some people to be angry. I hope that
What do you see that they don't see? What is it that you understand about this opportunity that they don't?
I believe in this town. I believe in us. I believe that we can do something incredibly positive. And that's the way I have to look at it.
I also asked her if she believed that this was the moment she would look back on as the end of her honeymoon. Could this also be her HB2 moment? What do you think?
I think, first of all, you owe me $3. That's your third HB2 reference. So I'm getting rich over here. I think that it all is going to depend on what happens in 2020. I mean, yes, absolutely. This is the focal point. This is the biggest decision she has made in her career. But I think that we just don't know what's going to happen with protesters and counter-protesters. But certainly, I would expect her to be challenged in the primary in 2019, even though we won't know the answer. I would think that someone's going to stand up and say, you know, I'm against Trump and the values he brings, and so I'm going to challenge Vile-Isles because she has endorsed and carried this bid through.
I mean, Did you notice that Jennifer Roberts said she would have said no?
Yeah, I mean, does anybody expect her to run unopposed in the primary?
Well, some people are listening to Braxton Winston's speech and saying, is he going to be the one that jumps in and challenges her?
At the same time, will she then get a broader group of Republicans and others who will come on her side to replace those? Yeah. We don't know. I do think if this pulls off beautifully without any hitches, any problems. Look what happened, Anthony Fox after 2012. He ended up on the – and this is different,
but she's
of
up for re-election before the convention will be here.
No, I'm just saying, yes, she'll probably get some pushback then. But if she survives that and this goes off well, we will be the city that pulled off something that no other city wanted. And as you say, I think Charlotte couldn't resist that.
And it's sort of an alternative path forward in this divided country that we're in right now. You know, here's somebody standing up and trying to be bipartisan, calling for reconciliation, trying to get people to talk together. You know, if we can pull that off here, I think that will be a feather in our cap.
It's worth remembering, too, that, you know, should the president have an appointment with the Grim Reaper or Robert Mueller, this could be a whole different game. This could be a renomination for President Mike Pence. And
how many
would that set off a whole
that'd
challenge.
Well, with HB2.
How many people have we heard over the last couple of weeks say, you know, if it wasn't Trump, if it was Mitt Romney or somebody else, I would support this.
But if it wasn't Trump,
and
it's
so
that
may what you're saying
Mike
is that
Pence,
may be the case.
Because former city councilman Malcolm Graham spoke on Monday night or Monday afternoon as an American, not as a former council member, and he said he urged the council to vote no so that we would not normalize what is not normal, referring to an opinion that a lot of people have about this president. But then today, Mark Washburn, I guess it's an opinion piece in the Observer, listed a couple of things to keep in mind as we move forward. I'm going to truncate this, but he says, Charlotte is a business town. We don't bid on conventions because they make us all warm and happy. We bid on them because hospitality is a local industry. Some people, he says, idolized Barack Obama. Some despised him. Ditto, Donald Trump. You don't have to respect the candidate, but you should respect the democracy. He says some opponents assume Trump will be the nominee. No one can see that far into the future. Assume nothing. Yes, there will be protests, he says, at the convention. There always are. And hosting political conventions is generally good for a city's brand, though it is a short-term benefit. Quick, he says, which city hosted the RNC in 2016?
Cleveland.
And I think we're going to have somebody on from the Cleveland Plain Dealer, I think, next week to talk about some of the negatives of the experience at that convention. And then he says, are we really going to make much money off this thing? I guess we'll determine that later.
Yeah, that's always a fight.
In his views, and I respect Mark, I worked with him, but you have to see when someone like a Malcolm Graham stands up, who has, you know, lost his sister in the Charleston church shooting. And you have to realize that some people in this town, like LaWanna Mayfield said, feel personally aggrieved and perhaps in danger by some of the rhetoric
right.
that has come out of this president's mouth.
Do you think people understand?
So they can't boil that down to economics.
Do you think Trump supporters understand that aspect of the people who are not in favor of President Trump, that they actually fear what his policies and his rhetoric are doing in their personal lives?
I think probably some do and some don't. I mean, some people do say, well, we didn't like Obama, and we put up with that. But the thing of it is, did you ever hear that kind of rhetoric come out of Barack Obama, President Barack Obama's mouth? And when you see the person who is the most powerful person in not only the country but the world say things about your group or have policies that you feel endanger you, that's whether you agree with the person or not. You have to see when Justin Harlow or Malcolm Graham stands up or LaWanna Mayfield that they honestly feel endangered. So it is different than just looking at the bottom line. So, and I'm not speaking for them.
And I think the bottom line is, in some ways, everybody would draw the line somewhere. Charlotte would not invite a convention of pedophiles and puppy killers here. So everybody would say there's something that's not acceptable. And the big question seems to be, what side of the line does this Republican Party and this president fall on? And some believe very strongly both ways.
I wanted to mention something, Mike. We were talking about, the business community, or I was a lot. Dan Roselli, who's the co-founder of Packard Place, he had an interesting tweet when the debate was going on this week. He said, quote, "When everyone else in the free market has determined there is not a good opportunity here, they are almost always right. RNC 2020 is that opportunity that literally no other city council in America wants, even the Republican-controlled councils, not a single one." So that was one of the more rare dissenting views from the business community.
Well, yeah, this is a president has said in Charlottesville there are good people on both sides. So you can see why some people would say they're in danger.
So all of this discussion, the vote on Monday afternoon at City Council on our accepting the contracts, the fact that the mayor and several council members and business leaders have flown to Austin, Texas, where the Republican National Committee is meeting to decide today on awarding the convention to Charlotte or Las Vegas or some mystery city, but it's going to be Charlotte. All of this comes in the same week, in some cases on the same day, that Donald Trump made some very big news. He wrapped up his summit in Helsinki, Finland, with a joint press conference with Russian President Vladimir Putin. A lot of Americans, as well as congressional Democrats and more than a few Republicans, wanted our president to hold Putin's feet to the fire over meddling in the 2016 elections. Of course, Putin has said yet to whether he and Russia had tried to influence the outcome.
The Russian state has never interfered and is not going to interfere into internal American affairs, including election process.
That's Putin speaking through an interpreter. Of course, the big news this week was what President Trump both didn't say by not telling Putin to knock
it off.
Is
that did or didn't?
Yeah. No, he did not.
Is that would or wouldn't? I'm sorry.
It should be obvious.
Double negative.
Let me get to the punchline. My gosh.
I'm sorry.
I'm trying to do material here.
I'm so ashamed. I'm sorry.
Anyway, the big news this week was what President Trump both didn't say by not telling Putin to knock it off, which was quickly eclipsed by what he did say about Russian meddling.
They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be. I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today.
And he said that, of course, standing right next to Putin. But it turns out what he didn't say was, he claims, not what he meant to say.
The sentence should have been, I don't see any reason why I wouldn't or why it wouldn't be Russia. Sort of a double negative. So you can put that in, and I think that probably clarifies things pretty good.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, he said reading off a paper in which it looked like he had.
Sounds like he got a grammar lesson.
A hostage video. There,
I think as Trevor Noah put it, it's a double negative. He messed up one day, and then he messed up again the next day.
And by the end of the week, he was, his White House was saying they're inviting Putin in for a summit in the White House. So we know where that is.
It's been a head-scratching, neck-breaking week as whiplash week here this week. And this is why people are saying this is not normal. Well, I'm not sure that's necessarily negative in every. Not normal doesn't have to be negative. It's just astounding because we've never seen anything like this before. And it's like, Nobody is talking. He's not talking to anybody. He's just doing this on the fly. Is that what's going on here?
And people around him have no idea what's going on. I mean, there's that famous thing yesterday with the National Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, on TV, and Andrea Mitchell reads the news that Putin is coming to the White House, and he said, say that again?
Yeah.
Do you think this is because he failed sixth grade civics and doesn't understand how the government works, or is it because for his entire career, he has been a small business owner where he didn't have to answer to anybody, and what he said goes, and that's the way it works in those situations. He owned the business, and this is his business.
Well, I think that's a part of it, and I also believe that whenever you bring up Russia, basically, he doesn't want to delegitimize his victory by saying that someone he doesn't seem to be able to separate interference, as all the intelligence agencies, everyone says,
collusion.
And so he conflates those two. And he is so basically saying, you know, I won this fair and square. And it's hard for him to separate those things. And, you know, at the same time, we're making our allies upset because, you know, he said this after basically dissing NATO and his responsibilities. And so it's a real problem.
So South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham slammed the president for not forcefully addressing Russian election interference, also took issue with the president when he said no when asked if he thinks Russia is still meddling with U.S. elections.
I believe the Russians are going to continue to do this until they pay a heavier price. But I believe the intelligence community assessment about what's happening in 2018. I'd like to hear more specifically from the president why he doesn't agree with them.
So this week the president walked that back and then seemed to walk it back again in the opposite direction. What has reaction been from other local lawmakers?
Well, I mean, you just played Lindsey Graham. His counterpart, Tim Scott, last night said, so far, so good. You had Trey Gowdy, the congressman from South Carolina, who essentially offered the mildest of differences of opinion and then really put the responsibility on Trump's staff and his cabinet to explain to Trump exactly what's going on and how the point we were just talking about how you can separate the meddling in the election from delegitimizing his victory. So it's all over the place.
Senator Richard Burr went on to say any statement by Vladimir Putin contrary to the facts that there was interference in the election is a lie and should be recognized by the president. Vladimir Putin, he said, is not our friend and never has been. And Senator Tom Tillis said there cannot be any equivocation. Vladimir Putin is to blame for Russia's poor relations with the United States and the rest of the free world. I'm not sure where that comment came in because I guess it's from the president saying we ought to be a friend.
You know, it would be really tough to be somebody like Tom Tillis or Richard Burr right now because your president, who you are in your party, you're supposed to support, you're having to constantly distance yourself from them, and that makes it really hard to do your job.
And it is the party of Trump, and most Republican voters say he did great in Helsinki.
There's other news. We're going to get to it, I promise you, when we come back, including suspensions and Kat's big transit plans in Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Join me and Sarah D'Elia, host of the She Says podcast, for a special public conversation beyond She Says, Sexual Assault in Charlotte, Thursday evening, August 2nd at 7 p.m. at McGlohan Theater at Spirit Square. Registration at WFAE.org. It's Charlotte Talks and the Local News Roundup on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Mary C. Curtis is here from Roll Call and WCCB. Eric Spanberg from the Charlotte Business Journal. And Doss Helms, education reporter with the Charlotte Observer. And David Borax, reporter for WFAE News. One more comment before we move on to other news. From North Carolina 11th District Republican Congressman Mark Meadows, who is a member of the Conservative Freedom Caucus after this past week of news. He says, we need to make sure that our electoral system is not tampered with. But he also said that there are times foreign policy sounds bad and works good. There are times it sounds good and works poorly. I'd rather have the first than the latter. And I think yesterday, referring to the president's press conference on Monday in Helsinki, I think yesterday we're seeing foreign policy that actually works.
Show me.
Okay, we'll have to wait. We are now a year into, we're going to switch gears now. We're now a year into the tenure of Clayton Wilcox as superintendent of Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools. Is his first year report card in, Ann?
Well, his actual formal evaluation from the school board is not in. They're going to be waiting for, among other things, this year's test scores and other data. And he has already said it's not going to be great. It's going to be flat and even down in some areas. But he is starting to make a name in the community. He was kind of slow at that. I think he did not come on with the big sales pitch that a lot of our others did.
All of our others. Yeah.
Well, even like an Ann Clark was maybe a little less self-promotional, but she was very well known in the community.
Right. She didn't need to.
I talked to a number of people who said, you know, he came to our town hall meeting. We've talked with him one-on-one. He seems accessible. He seems down to earth. I'm willing to give the guy a chance. There are some others who are still unimpressed with him, feel like he has not done much in this first year. Yeah. And I think that's true. You know, he inherited some pretty big tasks, including this whole student assignment thing. So this next year is going to be really interesting, because I think that will be when he either shows that he can put some flesh on some of his very strong words about the need to combat racism and poverty and to do better with diversity and cultural competence, or where he realizes that these are really, really tough problems, and I don't have a plan.
He's been pretty frank insofar as school superintendents in Charlotte go in terms of his comments about poor children, frank and emotional about those children. He has said that many of our kids are really suffering from the impact of poverty and racism, and to step away from that would be criminal on our part. He gets high marks for that. He gets high marks for his down-to-earth style. He gets higher marks for coming out and listening to people. But Corinne Mack, who's the president of the local NAACP, says there's too much talking and not enough changes. How many people would agree with her on that?
You know, I interviewed a number of people, but not everybody in Mecklenburg County, so I don't know. I mean, I just think that is, there are those split views.
And
out
some
there.
Teachers view him, I'm told, as their advocate. Is that strictly because he supported their march on Raleigh, or are there other factors that come into play with that?
I think so far it has been mostly those kinds of public, and he has encouraged them to be willing to speak out. I think he is willing to let them have a voice in things. Of course, everybody says they are, but I think he's getting some credit. Again, there are 9,000 teachers here in Charlotte-Mecklenburg, so I'm sure some disagree.
How long will that last if he follows through on what he's talking about, which is moving really good, successful teachers into struggling schools with poorly performing students?
That is going to be a really tough one, and that's one that every superintendent has talked about. Everybody agrees sort of at the 50,000-foot view that, yes, this should happen. Then you start talking about how to make it happen. And Charlotte-Mecklenburg has had a number of programs where they've offered various incentives. They've gotten some reaction, but not that sort of groundswell of change that would eliminate the gaps. Nobody has done forced transfers. And when I asked him specifically what he meant, because he talked about this in front of the principals, the closest thing that he has given to a "this is my vision, this is where we stand" was not done in a public event, as most of the others have done, but in a speech to principals that is on videotape. And so he talked about, it's time to consider this. He said, if you're a magnetic principal and you've got all the good teachers and your kids are already doing well, isn't it time to talk about how we get some of those schools that don't have as many? So if you're the teacher that went to work for this principal who is viewed as a great principal to work for, and you are told, we really need you to move over here to Principal B, who, yeah, really, you know, is not viewed as, you know, that it's a challenging school, it's a challenging principal. How do you make that happen?
It's like a sports team. If you have an all-star player and another team covets that player and gets him in a trade, it doesn't mean that the new team, the team that he's moving to, is going to be any more successful, because it is a team effort. Isn't that the same?
Well, it's like telling him he has to move from the Super Bowl team to one that finished last
right.
in the league.
Isn't that the same in schools? Wouldn't you have to move the team, the entire faculty and staff, to this other struggling school to make it work?
Right. And they even, I think it was Peter Gorman, maybe Heath Morris. I believe it was a Peter Gorman thing where he actually allowed principals to pick a team of teachers, not the whole staff, right. but five or six to bring with them. And again, that worked very well in a couple of schools where the principals were superstars, and the others, there was almost no change.
So you and I have been here a long time, and we've talked to a lot of school superintendents over the years. I can't even name them all. but they were all striking in their individual ways. How does he compare, Clayton Wilcox, to those other people who were more high profile, more dramatic, more put the spotlight on me?
Yeah, and I think about the first superintendent I really covered was Jim Pusley, and he was a communicator at all. But he came in and said, next year all high schools will have 75% proficiency. And he had correctly identified a huge problem, that there was very low proficiency, and I think he was sincere about solving it, but it was like this top-down mandate. You will make this dramatic change, boom. And Clayton Wilcox says he is also not a great public communicator, but he also says he's not going to do this sort of authoritarian, I'm going to tell you what you will do, that he's going to listen to people and he's going to make sure they're on board. So I think that wins him some points. I think there are also, you know, he's got a lot of churn going on in his administration, and there are people who think he just doesn't have a vision or is not good at communicating what it is or helping people get there. A
couple of quick stories that are very troubling if you're concerned about racial issues in schools, because this week you also report that despite efforts to the contrary, suspensions at CMS rose in the last school year, and that the biggest increase on those suspensions is among Black students, almost nine times the rate of white students. What does that tell us?
Well, that was a little bit of confusion on our internal part here. That was actually an older story. We do that story every year.
Okay.
I had included that as background for the fact that there is a new study out of North Carolina State University.
That's the other one.
That sheds some light on that. So this was, you know, I was saying, this is also something that we have seen repeatedly and dramatically in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools. This is, the study itself was only 40 education majors who want to be elementary school teachers, mostly white, mostly female, and you may want to summarize that. But the point is, it's not just some limited little fluky thing. It's a huge problem.
Well, let's correct the record then. Were suspensions up this year at CMS?
Those numbers tend to come out in March. I don't remember the most recent ones, but there just has not been a recent report. It's an ongoing thing.
The study that you're referring to took place by NC State University researchers, and it showed that prospective teachers were worse at recognizing emotions on Black faces than on white faces. The undergraduates also mislabeled more Black faces as being angry and thought misbehaving Black boys showed more hostility than misbehaving white boys. This is very troubling.
It is. And this goes to that nuance that, and boy, when I posted the story about that study on a teacher page, it just blew up because there are educators, Black and white, who say this is absolutely true, that this is happening. People don't intend to be racist. They don't intend to hurt the kids, but they just don't understand their Black students, and that becomes a huge issue for them.
Sure. Yeah, Wilcox has talked a lot about this implicit bias that runs not only through schools but through society, and we've seen that with people calling police on Black people who are going about their lives and how they react to Black males in particular. I had a Black male in the public school system here. And you see it trickle down, too, with things like who do you recommend for gifted programs, all of these kinds of things. And you've seen when you have the exact same behaviors, maybe behaviors that you would go to the principal's office or get a slight reprimand, when a Black male does it, it's seen as more of a threat. And then sometimes you call the resource officer in and you begin what you call the school-to-prison pipeline. And then it also affects the child's self-esteem on how they express themselves, how they behave. And if you feel
which
like
can
you're
lead to anger and misbehavior eventually.
And particularly if you yourself recognize the unfairness of it all. And let me tell you, kids in school recognize when a white classmate does something and when they do something. And so, as I said, this is a problem for society. But when it happens with young children as they're developing their attitudes about authority, about teachers, about school, about, you know, school work, it can be quite damaging. So it's good to hear, and that teachers are recognizing that themselves. Now the whole thing is how is it corrected?
Well, and the flip side is that there were equally some teachers weighing in and saying, you know, this is horrible. This is because of political correctness or because of, you know, overreacting to something that may be real. We're essentially hobbled. That we, you know, some people just believe that the Black kids, and it tends to be not only the Black and Hispanic kids, but especially true in the hyper-segregated schools. And there's some who say those are just bad kids, whether that's because of culture or family or individual choices. And if you keep teachers from reacting to that, you keep teachers from teaching the good kids who are in those schools.
Yeah, and Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, we've seen basically agree with that view, because the Obama administration had put into place saying teachers have to be cognizant of suspension rates and these things. And her argument and the administration's argument is we're going to take those away because we're hobbling teachers.
Okay.
So you see both of these things happening.
Another big story in Charlotte this week was the unveiling by CAT CEO John Lewis of the updated transit plan for the not-so-distant future. It's 2030, which is 12 years away, if you want to do the math. But it has a great big price tag. What is this plan? What does this plan consist of?
I'm glad you mentioned math. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, this is a new iteration of the 2030 plan that they've been working on for a while, based on feedback from people in meetings last year, based on the feasibility of things, and based on John Lewis, CAT CEO John Lewis's idea about trying to build out the whole system all at once. And
as opposed to piecemeal, because he says we'll never get it done.
Yeah, and he wants to get it done by 2030. He wants to get, you know, the system really needs to
be... Is that possible? Given the scope of the plan, which includes light rail and bus expansion, light rail out to Belmont in I've never heard that before.
It's not clear that there is...
They're going to pick up Ann and take her to work.
That's right.
It's not clear that there is funding for this, Mike. I mean, we're talking about $8 billion possibly, maybe even more. Well, I mean, some of the new things that they've mentioned that are being discussed at public meetings right now are... They've finally got a route, they think, to the airport. That would be down Wilkinson Boulevard. That's before they were trying to decide between West Boulevard and Wilkinson. Looks like that's going to happen. They're talking about having that go all the way across the Catawba River to Belmont, as you just mentioned. There's the discussion now about we can't use the existing railroad tracks up to Lake Norman. Maybe we can do light rail on US 21. That's another idea that's come out. And then there's this discussion about how to bring all the lines together downtown. And one of the ideas there is to build a tunnel under Uptown. And that could cost hundreds of millions of dollars. That, I mean, adding that to the price tag here would make it even more unfeasible from a financial standpoint.
Can I just throw in one little number there? John Lewis, the CEO, keeps talking about this as a back of the napkin estimate. And he's basing it on the cost per mile of the Silver Line that would go down Independence Boulevard. $8 billion is a rosy number, Mike. Yeah. I mean, we're not even talking about the land acquisition. So it's probably going to end up being 12. You know, something like that. And
even if they found the
let's
money.
Let's just say it's eight. Finding the money and getting other counties to buy in.
But if they found it today, if the money came through, if Bill Gates wrote a check today, could they get this done by 2030?
You mean just physically the construction?
Yeah.
If we started it tomorrow, we could get a lot of it done, right. I think. Yeah.
Well, CAT CEO John Lewis will be on this program Monday to talk about all of this.
Lucky there.
At 9 o'clock.
See?
Promo. All right. We talked about this last week a little bit, the CIAA tournament, which has been here for over 10 years, which will remain here through 2020. They started shopping around for a new host city. At least they announced that they were shopping around about last week sometime. And that's because it's been here a long time and they want to freshen it up. But also they're a little ticked at some of the things that have happened here to people who patronize the tournament. They have some nibbles, they tell us. And among those cities are Atlanta, your hometown, Baltimore, Mary, Winston-Salem, and Richmond. That's a wide variety. Why those four cities?
Well, first of all, those are all, with perhaps the exception of Atlanta, all of those are within
the footprint of
the CIAA, although 8 of the 13 schools are in North Carolina. So, look, this is an event that we talked about this last week. You know, it's tens of millions of dollars of people spending money on hotels and restaurants and all those things. So it is an attractive event. And James Mitchell, city councilman who's been very supportive of the CIAA, is very worried that competition could affect Charlotte.
So we'll keep our eye on that. And we'll keep our eye on Major League Baseball. They said they might expand to Charlotte. What?
Yeah, won't that be a fun debate? How about building a football stadium and a baseball stadium at once, plus light rail?
And what happens to the Knights? What happens to the Knights? You put the football stadium where the Knights stadium is.
That's right.
And you do a little land swap here.
You've got the plan, Mike.
What a mess.
Okay, if you're not keeping up with the latest music trends, you may not know that some of the hottest new artists around today are police officers in departments around the country. Officers are doing videos in which they lip sync to the hits, and departments are challenging other departments to lip sync battles. These started as an attempt to humanize police, and many of these videos have gone viral with some justification. Some of them are really good. Now, CMPD has gotten into the act, and so has the TIGA-K Police Department. I think Belmont's Police Department has gotten into this. Tuesday, CMPD released a video for the lip-sync challenge. These videos also showcase officers' dancing skills. I put that in quotes.
If you've ever wanted to see grown men in uniform doing the floss, this is your opportunity.
Some of these people are shockingly good. No report.
And some are not, Mike.
I was trying to be charitable. No report yet on CMPD's attempt, but we'll be putting their video and Tiga K's video on our website so you can see for yourself how these guys
You decide.
We don't want to taint you. Because I got to tell you, the Tiga K department went all out. It's like 5.5 minutes of dancing and lip syncing on the Tiga K golf course and boat cruises. And we're going to leave you with the music they chose to use. One of these police departments chose to use because we're out of time. Thank you all for the hour. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.